interesting to see the different camps and meet the people and stuff like that. One thing at the receiving center where all the refugees come in, there's three evangelical churches in the town of Vlora. And it was really good to see all three of these churches. They came together as one group and worked at the food distribution table. And the three churches, I'll run them down. There's a Brethren church in the town. There's a more conservative church. There was a Youth with a Mission started a church there, and that's a very charismatic church. And then there was a more of a middle ground, a Baptist type church there. And all three of these churches came together, and it was pretty good to see the unity in the church. And they would work. They worked there seven days a week, 24 hours a day. There was never a time when there was no one at the food table. There were times when there wasn't any food, but there were always people there waiting for food or ready to give out or ready to help. So that did and they all had their tags, a community of evangelical Christians in Vlora. It was, I think, a good testimony to God, because not only the refugees notice it, but the press. I mean, you had the Albanian press, which was there the whole time. But you had the other thing. You had, like, Newsweek, and you had all these international press come in and see and interview. And you had the government, the Albanian government, who was supposed to be in charge and running this thing. They really noticed, because they weren't doing anything. And the church came in and kind of organized everything and took over. And a lot of the staff from the orphanage noticed, and they said a lot of things, how they were impressed with the giving of the church, and because most of the church are Albanians, and they thought they weren't too surprised that foreigners would come in and help the refugees, but they were kind of surprised that the Albanian people would give that much time and effort. So this is a pretty good witness there. About the Albanian people, they're Muslim by statistics or whatever, but in reality they're atheist. They're Muslim or Orthodox. There's like 70% Muslim, 30% Orthodox, but very, very few of these people actually believe in Islam or Orthodoxy. They're all pretty much atheist. At least they live that way. And so that's a little like if you ever read on Albania and say, oh, Muslim, it's a Muslim country. Well, not really. Most of them wear European dress, style dress. And there is a lot of the Muslim culture is shown in the men and women relationship. The men run things and they work and they hang out a lot. But they kind of like have their place, and then the women have their place. They like pretty much stay at home, or some of them do run shops and stuff, but there's not a lot of, you don't see a lot of men and women walking in town together. You see lots of groups of guys and lots of groups of women. That's not much association. And like dating is, it's not even acceptable there. There's no such thing as dating or hanging out with friends of the opposite sex. It's courtship. Courtship is, you know, a guy sees a girl that he likes, finds out who she is, talks to her brother or something, and they set up a chaperone date. And after a couple of those chaperone dates, they get engaged and get married. So it's a little different. A little more conservative type culture. What else did I do? Oh yeah. like I said, I did a lot of driving. Also, a lot, I told you about cleaning the bathrooms. That was kind of a nightly thing for a while. And the other thing that I did a lot was I cooked eggs. The orphanage right off the bat got assigned egg cooking duty or whatever. What the refugees ate when they came in, they were given water, bread, cheese, and eggs. That was what they had a lot of. So one of the things that we did was we'd bring in a couple thousand eggs, because the orphanage had like 8 burners, stove burners. So they'd bring in these eggs and we just boil them, just hard boil them, and spent a lot of nights doing that. If it was during the day, we'd have the cooks do it. That was fine. I like that. But a lot of times they wouldn't bring them in till like 9 or 10 at night. And you spend until like 2 or 3 in the morning cooking eggs for the refugees down at the center. So did a lot of egg cooking. Driving over there, since I did a lot of it, I can talk a little about that. Basically, there's no laws, there's no rules. It's just don't get hit, don't hit someone else. There's all sorts. A lot of people have bicycles, so you're always watching for bikes. You couldn't even count the many potholes there are in the city. It's the worst roads I've seen. They've got like horses and donkeys wandering around, bunch of dogs. It's just horrible driving. And then you get these people, since they don't really have jobs or anything, they're like driving around really slow, just kind of cruising. And then they see a friend coming the other way, and the cars come like this, and they just stop in the middle of the road and just start chatting. And it's like, stop all traffic, you have to like drive up on the sidewalk and go around them and stuff. But I did get in an accident over there. I was driving a van at night, and I was going down the road, and the oncoming traffic, the lights were glaring on me, so I couldn't really see. As soon as it passed, I saw right in front of me this big pile of gravel in the middle of the road. So I hit this pile of gravel and banged up the car a little bit, punctured the radiator, and blew out a light. A couple people were minorly injured in the car, but nothing serious. So those are the things that I had to watch out for a lot, or just things in the road. Like, you drive there, the road's nice, and then driving back, there's gravel in the road, or or stuff like that. Broken cars. The car breaks down. They have no garages there. They have no mechanics. So a lot of times you see them, and the roads, since they're so rough, you see a lot of joints failing and wheels falling off and stuff like that. And they have no tow trucks. So you see a lot of people doing major maintenance in the middle of the road. And it's pretty crazy. It's different. Some of the things now that the refugee situation has gone away pretty much, when I go back, what I want to do is a couple things. One, I want to spend a lot more time with the children. Some of the things I did with the children when I was there was, one, just go outside and play with them a little. That's easy. They do it all the time, pretty much. And they're always looking for people to show off to and ride their bikes for and jump on the trampoline and stuff like that. So, but we took them down to the beach once. We took them out for, not all of them, but some of them. We took them out for ice cream and took them on this, they have this little kind of carousel thing. And they don't get out of the orphanage too much, and they really like going out and doing stuff like that. I want to do more of that. I also want to become more involved in one of the churches. I haven't quite decided which church I like, but I already have kind of an inside thing on the Brethren Church. I know some of the people there, and I wouldn't mind talking to them a little more. I want to do more discussions with some of the Christians on theology. There's this one girl there. She's Italian, and I talked to her like 3 days straight on sovereign grace, and she's an Arminian. And I was working on her 3 days, and she just no. And then it was funny because after this, I walked in to Mark's office the next day after those 3 days, and Mark's got Romans 9 out, and he's like pointing it to her because Mark believes in sovereign grace, and it was pretty good. We gave her a lot to think about. I don't know what she's. Haven't talked to her much since then, but I shared preterism a couple times. I tended to get pretty sedated responses from amillennialists and postmillennials. They just thought, that's interesting. Threw maybe a verse or two, but that was pretty much it. Whenever I talked to a premillennialist, it was pretty much, they were pretty excited on their view and didn't like my view very much. So I'll have to talk a little more. Mark's a dispensationalist, so I've got some future discussions with him. But the one thing that I will need prayer for and that I need to do really before I really get some of these things down is learn the language. That prevented me a lot from talking over there. I was limited to English speaking people. And a few times when we started, because I picked up some phrases and words, but when I tried talking to someone, the conversation always ended and we had to go to a translator. We had to find someone that could translate for us. So, I've got a little book to learn, plus I'll be over there hearing it every day and that, but I'm going to spend more time studying the language, and with the language I'll be able to speak to people, especially on the gospel or on religion, and that's what I really want to do. Also with the kids, it's nice to be able to talk to children. So, and another prayer request I would have is I need to find an apartment, a cheap apartment. Apartments normally run from like $150 to $300 over there. I'm looking for something right at $200. The cheaper the better. I'm not going to live. I'm looking for a really cheap place. I'll be living. I'll have a mattress, a desk, I'll have a radio, a gas burner, and maybe a little fridge. That'll be about my extent of furniture. But those are my two big things that I will need when I first get over there. Also, there's a German missionary that had started one of the evangelical churches there. He was there during the refugee crisis. He's met a lot of the refugees, the coast of our refugees, and started a little Bible study, a little church at one of the camps. Well, now the refugees going back, he wants to go back to Kosovo and start a church in Kosovo. Well, Kosovo is much more strict than Albania. Albania, I don't know what the rules are, but it's pretty easy. If you want to start a church, you go in there and start a church. In Kosovo, they're much more strict. They're more Muslim. They actually practice Islam up there instead of Albania. But he just can't start a church up there. So what he's going to try to do is start an orphanage up there and try to work in, you know, the back door. If he can start an orphanage there and then get Bible study or something on the side, it's kind of a back door into to Kosovo. And with some of the Christians that from Kosovo, he's going to try that. And if he does try that and he does start that, there may be a chance for me to go up there and help him start it. Because if he starts an orphanage from scratch, there'll probably be a lot of work to be done. So I would be interested in that. I don't know if he'll be able to go up there, and if he does go up there, when, how long, that sort of stuff. That's all really tentative, but something that I'm interested in. Right now, I would like questions, so I can stay up here for a little longer. Questions, anything, people, country, a plane ride, I don't care.
Realistically, how much do you think you live?
I think 200 to 250, because rent, I'm looking at 150 to 200, and that's about it. I won't have a car, so don't need any insurance or gas. Food will be supplemented by the orphanage, like canned food and pasta I'll be able to get from the orphanage. So the only food I'll need to buy is like fresh meat and fresh vegetables. So, and I actually don't plan to do a lot of cooking. I plan to help some of the other volunteers there to buy their food and then just eat at their houses a lot. They're all right with that. It's not sound, it sounds bad, but that's how it is. But other than that, there's really no real expenses over there.
What kind of apartment are you talking about?
It's a two-room thing. It's got one room's like a regular bedroom, and then the other room can be used as like a bedroom, or it's got, most of the time it has a little kitchen on it, but it has it doesn't even need a kitchen. I've seen a place that just had two like bedrooms and one bathroom, no kitchen. But I don't really need a kitchen. If I have a gas burner and an outlet to plug in a stove, that's all I need. So, and the bathroom, you got your sink there, so you can get water. But that's most of our apartments over there are the same. It's a two-bedroom thing. You walk in, you have a little hallway, just tiny little hallway, and you got three doors: bedroom, and bathroom. And that's it. So, yep.
Do you pay for your water?
Water and electricity you pay for, but it's really cheap. It's normally no, but a lot of times the landlord will pay the utilities, like he gets the bills, but then he just charges you for them too. Like the bills are in his name, so he pays them and then just says, "Oh, you owe me like $5 this month or whatever." So, yeah. Well, let's see. In the winter, electricity goes out a lot. It just, days at a time, it'll just go off. It'll come on. And even in the summer, when I was there, it never went off like for entire days, but it would go off for hours at a time. Or they have like a three-phase system, which isn't like what I'm used to. Three-phase is all one, but they got like three different lines coming in. A lot of times one phase will be down, so you have like part of the building will be off, but the other part won't. So electricity goes out quite a bit in the winter, I'm told, and water goes out a lot in the summer. And I experienced a lot of water shortage, and it's not too bad until you really want to shower. But normally you got like those little 2 liter or 1.5 liter Coke bottles. You fill them up with water, and you always keep some water in your house or by your sink or something, so you can always have a little water to brush your teeth or whatever. Fill up big buckets and put them in the toilet so you can flush your toilet. But water normally goes out all day, and then it comes on at night. So at night you normally have water, and you fill up your buckets at night or take your shower at night. A lot of the apartments have it regulated, and they have like during a certain hour they have water, like from 5 a.m. to 6 a.m. you have water, and then from 2 o'clock to 3 o'clock you have water in the afternoon, and then from like 8 in the evening to 9 in the evening you have water. So you just know you have water those three times. Do wash your dishes, shower during those times, and fill up your buckets. So that's, utilities are off a lot, but if you get used to it, it's not that much of a problem. Yep.
Do you have access to
emails that correspond? No. I don't know. They don't have email, no. I mean, they get their mail, like regular mail, once a month, because it gets sent to Greece, because there's no mail in Albania. So you get sent to Greece, and they go down to Greece and pick it up once a month. And they have a phone, and they just use international calls a lot. Entertainment? Books? If you knew Italian or Albanian, you could watch TV. But most people do own TVs there. But they have no movie theater in town. Most of the entertainment is socializing. That's what they do. They get together, sit at bars and talk. Of course, Europe, they're big into soccer. So they have a big soccer stadium, but women aren't allowed, so it's just the men that can go. But all right, one more. Yes, but it's not. Yes, it's very high, but it's acceptable. It's not like America, alcoholism is bad, because it leads to abuse and that. But over there, 95-99% of the women are abused, and it's just normal, it's accepted. And the men going and drinking hard liquor early in the morning is normal. So they drink their liquor, go to work. I wouldn't know. I don't know. Maybe. Okay, I guess that's it.
Thanks, Nate. I appreciate you sharing with us.